And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner, alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City, and we're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our 2018 underwriters for Art on the Air are Valpo University's Brower Museum and our landlord, Walt Breidinger. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this great historic building here right along Route 130 in Valparaiso, please call him at 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. And we'd like to thank them for their generous support. And thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager and engineer, for our show today. By the way, we are speaking with two underwriters today. If you're a WVLP listener, whether you listen to us online at WVLP.org, it's that time of year again when we begin a short on-the-air fundraising drive we call our community campaign. WVLP is looking for your support for our community radio station. While the campaign is going on through November 21st, we'll be happy to have you become part of WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would like to invite you to become an underwriter for our program, especially if you are something related to the arts for Art in the Air. WVLP will be part of the Giving Tuesday, which is happening November 27th. So if you're feeling like giving, you know, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You can find out any information about that at WVLP.org/support. We have several levels where we will give you acknowledgments, underwriting. The basic level is at $300 a year, intermediate level $600, underwriter level $900 a year, a major underwriter $1,200, and $2,400. And the only difference between them is how often we'll put you on with each individual show, if you're a show sponsor or a station sponsor. Again, you can find out more information at WVLP.org/support. So don't just be a listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so, so we can continue to bring you the great program that we have in your community radio station. Again, WVLP.org/support. If you're interested in being a guest on this program or sending us information about your arts or arts-related event or appear, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. And our program is always rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. and it's always streaming live at WVLP.org. And now we're going to start with this week's calendar. In Porter County, Brower Museum continues through November 9th with the photography of David Robert Austin. We ended up in Australia, Lives Honored, Dreams Imagined. It's based on a true story. And this special veterans exhibit with Asher Yates in the Strumview Gallery on the second floor continues. The opening reception was last November 7th, but it continues on through the month. Krista Steinke, Good Luck with the Sun and Other Works. At the Ellen Fermi Gallery, and the Dunes photographer Dave Larson continues on US 12 and Beverly Shores. Chesterton Art Center, the November exhibit, the Area Art Association member exhibit, Regional Expressions, will continue through November 30th. Their gallery is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 4, and Saturday, 11 to 2, and that's located with a little red door in Chesterton. Uptown Roots, it's the Liz exhibit, and it's the Uptown Cafe, and it continues through November. Liz Warfel will have there. It'll be a great time to see her work there. Also, one I just picked up today, I almost forgot about this one for Porter County, the Depot. That's located at US 12 in the Depot, the South Shore Depot, the Depot Museum. They're doing their gift and holiday shopping called the 61st Holiday Marketplace, and it's running Saturday, Saturday, November 17th, and Sunday, November 18th, 9 to 4 on Saturday, 10 to 1. So that's what we have going on in Porter County. Esther, what do we have going on in your neck of the woods?
A whole bunch of stuff as usual. The Lubesnik Center for the Arts, Waiting for a Sign, explores the use of signage, text, and iconographic visual images and symbols. The work of 8 contemporary artists can be viewed in the Heinemann, Brinca Cross, and Susan Block Galleries through January 12th. The Holiday Artisan Market Member and Volunteer Appreciation Party, Friday, November 16th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. They're offering a 10% discount on all items with gift bagging and author signing of children's books by Connie Castle and James Dworkin. There'll be a cash bar, hors d'oeuvres, awards, and shopping. At the Southern Shore Art Association on exhibit for the months of November and December, it's their holiday exhibit called The Gift of Art. The gallery is at 724 Franklin Street. For more information, please visit their Facebook page, SSAA. The SFC Gallery at 607 Franklin Street. Their current exhibit is the watercolors of Kathy Loss Rathburn, The Streets of Chicago, through the end of the month. at Blink Contemporary Art at 1709 Franklin Street. They're exhibiting the new work, The Paintings, Drawings, and Sculptures by artists Rick Lang and Suzanne Cohen Lang. Rising Phoenix Gallery at 2803 South Franklin Street has a new exhibit called Playing in the Mud, and it's all about ceramics. The Nest at 803 Franklin Street will be exhibiting the abstract paintings of David Kreiner and the geometric paintings and sculpture of Maggie Kreiner now through December 16th. Also, there's the Michigan City Toastmasters. They meet every first and third Monday of the month. Meditation Circle with Nikki Knopfs, November 21st. It's every Wednesday at 6:30. Drum Circle with Don Wenig. It's every second Thursday of the month. And November 17th, there is the Ananda Lila Kirtan, and they are going to have a concert, and it's a healing soundscape with the focus of songs for peace and unity. Ongoing piano lessons with Miss Melissa Krause. And you can find details on the Facebook page, The Nest Michigan City. And now,
Lake County. Boy, LaPorte County is really hopping, and your place at The Nest has really got lots of things going on.
Lots of programming.
That's fantastic.
Lots of community programming.
Esther's doing a great job there at The Nest. Well, in Lake County, South Shore Arts, a Friendsgiving artist reception and potluck, and that'll be a Friday, November 16th. And if you're listening to us live, that's tonight, 6 to 9 p.m. at South Shore Arts Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster. Feel free to bring your favorite snack or goodie to share with the group. South Shore Arts will be providing the beverages. Indie Windy, a love story, is running through January 9th in the Bachman Gallery. It's going to feature artists from Indiana, Chicago that execute large public arts to create new environments in aging urban and manufacturing areas and documenting their experiences. The exhibit was curated by Ish Muhammad, a self-taught artist from Indiana who maintains a studio at the Zao B Art Center in Chicago. That's in the Bridgeport community on the south side. The exhibit will present an overview of creative activity currently underway by community and Midwest artists, some of whom have been working together for over 30 years. Atrium Gallery continues with the Ori Schaefer, The Nature of the Abstract, and that's continuing till almost the end of the month, November 25th. Crown Point Branch continues with Mike Barrett Kolowski's Wildscapes, and that continues through January 5th. 119th Street Artists, they will have their Oliver Bound, which is a juried exhibit, running through November, opening November 26th, running through January 16th at the Cornerstone Gallery. That's the back of the Centier Bank, open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 9 to 12, and they will have an opening reception on November 30th, and that's the 119th Street Artists. Studio 659, they're having their children's art exhibit open to artists 18 and under. You can find out more information about that by emailing them. Go to their website, Studio 659 on Facebook, or artscouncil659@gmail.com. They're on 119th Street in Whiting. And finally, the Indiana Ballet Theater will be forming its 21st annual performance of The Nutcracker, and that's going to be performed in several locations in Northwest Indiana. It'll be November 30th through December 2nd at Crown Point High School, December 8th and 9th at Valpo High School, and December 13th and through 15th at Indiana University Northwest. You can find out details at ibtnw.org. That's ibtnw.org. Or go on Facebook at Indiana Ballet Theater. So that's what all is happening in Lake County and throughout the region. Again, if you have any information you'd like us to get on the air, we'd be happy to do so. Again, it's artontheair@gmail.com. And we'd be happy to get you on the air. Well, we have a great guest today. We're excited to have her. She's one that's been on Art on the Air before, and I've gotten to know her just probably in the last year or so. So we have Dorothy Graydon here. She's an award-winning contemporary artist whose art is inspired by ancient visions, prehistoric art of Americas. And if you've ever seen her work, it really will blow your mind. So welcome, Dorothy.
Thank you very much, Larry. Thanks, Esther, for having
Dorothy.
Me.
So, well, we want to find out a little bit about your background, maybe a more personal background, like where you come from, or are you from the region or anything, or how you got here?
Oh, I'm from the region, all right. I was born in Gary.
Okay.
Lived about four blocks from the steel mills, and spent a lot of time in the dunes, lots and lots of time in the dunes, and went to high school, grade school in Gary. Went down to IU, got my degree in education in at IU, Indiana University, Bloomington, and have a master's degree in liberal studies from Valparaiso University. I am not classically trained or professionally trained artist. I've been doing art my whole entire life, and have taken many, many classes at universities and private lessons, and just doing all kinds of wonderful things. Collage, sculpture. I did stained glass when it was popular. did macrame, weaving. I've done all kinds of things. You know, I just really love art. It is interesting, though, because when I do art, I always look for tribal kinds of art to do. And I always have. And when I look back when I was 10 years old at some of the art that I did back then, it was pretty tribal looking. So it's just in me.
That's good. That's interesting, because I know, and we met quite a long time ago.
Yes.
And your work has evolved so much within that theme. And so where was the first place you saw petroglyphs, and how did it then make the leap into your art?
Well, I've been hiking out west for over 30 years. Wow. I started hiking with my sister and my daughter about 30 years ago. My sister lives in New Mexico, and I'd go out to visit her every summer, and she'd always plan a trip. And so we started just looking for ruins. We called them ruins back then. Now I call them ancestral sites, because I have a Hopi friend that corrected me. So
we have to be politically correct, right?
Oh, yes. Well, Hopi correct for sure. And so anyway, we started looking for ancestral sites, and we were in Chaco Canyon, and we went to Hovenweep and El Moro and Mesa Verde and all those great, wonderful ancestral site places. And I started looking on the walls, and there were carvings on the walls. And, you know, I taught kindergarten for 25 years, and the carvings kind of looked like kindergarten drawings in a way. But the thing is they're much more sophisticated. They have a spiritual background. They have informative backgrounds. It's just the way they carved these things in the walls. And so I got really interested in seeing how they were different in different places. Like when we were in Texas, the carvings were different than they were in New Mexico or Utah or Montana or Wyoming. They're different in every place depending on the culture, the geography, the time period, because some of the
things... The stone that they're carving in,
whether it's sandstone or limestone or basalt. And so we just started... I just got really, really interested in seeing them, and so I started making appointments with archaeologists and ethnologists and linguists to learn more and more about these things. And so basically I've hiked everywhere from the Rio Grande all the way into central Montana, and have seen many, many thousands. I've taken thousands of photographs of the prehistoric art, and some of it's 11,000 years old.
It's incredibly moving, no matter where you see it. It's just kind of overwhelmingly beautiful.
It is absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And the talent that went into some of these things, that you know that it took them months to carve and paint these images into the walls.
Yeah, so sophisticated.
Extremely sophisticated. So it really, what drew me to it was the kindergarten art, but it's far, far beyond that. I've barely scratched the surface, and I've been doing this for 30 years. But
I know, it's always like a treasure when I go hiking and I see the petroglyphs. I just feel like I've hit treasure.
It is. It's like a treasure hunt almost. And so what really started my drawing, I've always done things connected with that, but I really got serious about it about 6 years ago. I was hiking up in Wyoming, about 10,000 feet up in the Wind River area, and I saw these petroglyphs that were carved on basalt boulders that were, all of them were facing the water. There are three lakes up there, and they were all facing the water, all facing the lakes, and they were very scary and very creepy looking, kind of like a Tim Burton kind of a thing, you know? And
like sentinels almost?
Almost like sentinels, yeah, yeah. And very intricate, extremely intricate, interior lines, lots of interior lines. Mm. And I came home and I thought, these things are just, they're just so amazing, I have to start drawing them. So I started I used the photographs that I took as inspiration for just drawing things that were similar like it, just in black and white.
Because I did see those first ones, and where you are today as opposed to where you started, it's like, I mean, yes, it's the same, but it's wildly different. I mean, it was, now you're doing so much layering and over, you know, symbols over symbols, where it was pretty straightforward, those beginning ones, really delicious and wonderful, but mm-hmm. nowhere near. And I think that back then you weren't making your paper that you, right?
I think those first ones, it was, I was using Arches, right. Cotton pressed paper. And I have this friend, Edwin Shelton. He teaches, he's right now teaching art at Marquette High School. And he's also the president of the of our Area Artists Association, which Larry's also a member.
He almost conned me into being president at the first meeting we were at, too.
Yes, he did.
And I said, no, wait a minute. I don't want to be a member for a while.
Give me a year. And so I had these little drawings of these petroglyphs, and I showed them to Edwin, and Edwin said, make them big. They're fantastic. Make them bigger. Make them bigger. So I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to do that. So I started making them really big, like 20 on papers, 22 by 31. And I really liked them. And then I did have a show at the Lebesnik,
right.
About 5 or 6 years ago. And then I got into paper making, which is what you mentioned.
Yes,
Esther,
with Andrea Peterson.
Andrea Peterson over at Hook Pottery and Paper. And I started putting color, because I absolutely love color. So I just started putting color on the cotton rag. I'd pull the big sheets of cotton rag and start putting color on them. And then I started planning where the color went, because I'd have an idea in my mind of what petroglyph or what image I wanted to put on it. And some of them were random, and some of them were very well planned. And then I started using stencils, like you were talking about layering. I started mm-hmm. making my own stencils and putting stencils on the paper. And then I'd get the paper home, and I'd look at it and say, oh my gosh, this paper is so pretty. Why should I even put anything on it?
I know, it's the truth with the paper that you make. It's gorgeous.
It's just beautiful
it
paper.
It is beautiful.
But then Andrea always said, you're just going to make it better. You're just going to make it better. So
I know, like we would do with our students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. right. And so I started looking at, and I told her, I said, this is so beautiful, I have no idea where to start putting an image on this paper. And, you know, typical Andrea, she said, just go home and figure it out.
But, you know, don't you think that all of your experiences go into it? Because when I look at your current work, well, even actually those first ones, they have... And Dorothy's also an avid scuba diver, and I feel that in the static. I feel the movement, and I think that comes from your diving. Personally, I feel it comes because you just have this sense of beautiful movement within these figures. And lately, it just seems to, some of the images seem to, at least to me, relate to what you've seen on your scuba trips. I don't know whether it's true or not.
You are 100% right. Mm. I mean, if you look closely at my pictures, you'll find hidden fish. You'll see the garden eels. I love the garden eels.
Yeah, the eels are great.
I love the eels. I love the octopus. I love the jellyfish. And I was diving last week.
I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, in Mexico, and I did 12 dives last week, so I'm now over 300 dives.
Wow. You know, I'm interested in how you got into diving.
Oh, well, I've always been a swimmer.
Okay.
I've been a swimmer since I was about 5 years old, and I had been snorkeling, and I did one of those resort course dive lessons back in the 80s with my husband in Hawaii, and I really loved it. We were only underwater for about 20 minutes, and we only went down about 15 feet, you know, and it was really fun. And I've been talking about diving for a long time, and then when my daughter was a senior in high school, I said, you know, let's for spring break, let's go on a let's get certified and go on a dive trip. And I talked my husband and my daughter into it. So the three of us certified at the same time.
Oh,
and
wow.
Went for it and did our open water certification in Cozumel. And that's where we were last week. And now we were there with my daughter and her husband.
Who is also certified.
So we went diving. And I just finished a picture yesterday. And it's got a petroglyph in it. But it's blue, and there's not a lot of blue in the desert, right? So, but it looks like the petroglyph is floating in water. It just comes subconsciously, and I ended up putting a few fish in there in hiding place because I always hide fish in my pictures. And I actually named it neutral buoyancy, which is a scuba diving term because, mm-hmm. you know, neutral buoyancy means that you can just float without kicking. It's like what fish do. They just maintain neutral buoyancy. So I'm finding more and more that my scuba diving and my hiking, the desert and the ocean, are coming together more and more in my pictures.
Now, you recently had an exhibit at Chester and Arts Center that was an all-woman show.
And I did.
How many pieces did you have in that? I know it was huge.
Oh, I think there were about 30 pieces.
And, you know, the one thing that strikes me about is how absolutely, now this is probably more your more modern work, is how absolutely strikingly colorful it is. I mean, you just go in there and there's this color on most of the pieces that just jump out at you. And it's, I remember I was talking to someone, I said, where's her head when she's doing some of this stuff? Because it's just absolutely, I mean, I can't even imagine when I look at your pieces, it's like, wow, it's just so, you could stand there and study one piece for hours. You know, the complexity of it. So,
thanks, Larry. Yeah, I try to layer different things inside of my pieces, and most of them have stories, either petroglyph stories or scuba diving stories. You know, I have one that my daughter was married in Hawaii on the Big Island. She had one of those destination weddings. You know, and
I've been there for just recently.
And we did a night dive, and the boat took us out. 3 miles off the island into the pelagic area of the ocean, where the creatures come up from the bottom to feed at night, and they were glowing, and they looked like fluorescent lights, and they were blinking, and there were things that looked like snakes that were 14 feet long. But they were colonies conserving energy. And then there were some creatures that looked like TIE fighters from the Star Wars movies, and we were tethered to the boat so we wouldn't get lost, by the way.
So now are we going to see glow-in-the-dark paint on your...
Well, there is some fluorescent stuff in my work now. and then there were petroglyphs on the Big Island, too, so I saw the petroglyphs. So I did do a picture that's a combination of petroglyphs and the night dives, so you see a little bit of both in that one picture.
Has it been... Has it been exhibited yet, or is
it? It has.
Okay.
Yeah,
You have anything out in exhibit right now that people could go see your work?
I have three pieces at the Chesterton Art Gallery right now. One of them is of jelly. One of them is a jellyfish picture, and then recently there's the Performing Arts Center, the South Shore Arts people that have their headquarters in the Performing Arts Center. They have satellite galleries, and one of them is the Toll Theater, T-O-W-L-E,
right.
Toll Theater in Hammond, and I just had 20 pictures there.
And we didn't get that on the Lake County thing, because they, you know, sometimes when they send us things, but I missed that when I went to the South Shore, so if you ever do exhibit stuff, make sure you send it to us so we can put it on there, because we put things that are at the Toll Theater.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah, because that's a sub-gallery of South Shore. By the way, you're listening to Dorothy Graydon, our contemporary artist guest today on Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM. And just real quickly, I'd like to remind you that if you'd like to support this program or the whole station, you can do that by going to WVLP.org/support to continue the wonderful community programming, bringing guests like Dorothy on here and the art guests and all the music programming. So please, if you're listening, no matter if you're listening on a stream or something like that or live, please support Dorothy here and hearing more artists like her. So scuba diving, and then you move on to the whole thing. Do you have anything in the different you'd like to try? You've done paper making or things like that. Do you have something on the horizon you want to try differently?
Well, I've done sculpture. I've made little miniature sculptures, and I'm going to get back into that. And I do dye silk scarves and I did that for a while, and I'm getting back into that. And actually,
good. They were beautiful.
Thank you, yes. Thank you, Esther.
Especially the ones that had the petroglyphs on them.
The petroglyphs, yeah. They were full of petroglyphs. Yeah, I'm kind of addicted to petroglyphs. My Hopi friend, I've traveled with her the past couple years, and I usually meet her at the reservation in Arizona, the Hopi reservation, and then we hop in her pickup truck and camp for like 10 days just dry camping in the pickup truck. And we go out, and you know, the thing is, and as she has told me, she said, you've been doing this for 30 years, but you haven't even scratched the surface. I mean, Bear's Ears is in Utah, and it's now being sold off by the government, but it has over 100,000 ancestral sites.
Oh my gosh.
On it that are going to disappear. So part of my mission is to bring awareness to the history and the importance of these sites that will be lost to our country if we're not aware of it. And so a lot of my work is bringing forward these ancient images to introduce people so they will be aware and be able to appreciate these things so they can help protect some of these special areas. So I'm getting more into that, is the awareness of it. I do talks. I give presentations at universities and art galleries, and I talk about how important these sites are. In fact, sometimes when I'm hiking with my friend, I'll see a petroglyph in a canyon with her, and I'll say, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. And I'll say, do you know what this means? And she'll say, yes, I do. And then I say, well, what does it mean? And she'll say, I'm sorry, I can't tell you. Because the Hopis are still using some of these images. And, you know, some of the sites, when I go to them, you see beads hanging from the trees. You see where the Native Americans were doing ceremony or ritual with fire, leftover fire remnants. That they perform at some of these sites, and just like the sites up in Wyoming, they're real creepy, scary ones. there's so many hot springs in that area. The Shoshone have a lot of mythology surrounding the hot springs and how scary they are, and you know, like owl babies and siren type women that will pull men down into the water, and there's all these lots of archetypal kinds of,
right, that you find throughout cultures
exactly, yeah. And you see
everybody has their own stories, but they all are based
like water woman, mm-hmm. And you know, the sirens and the Rusalkas from Russia, and you know, so you see a lot of archetypal kinds of things.
So now I remember, and I think it was a few years back, where somebody had graffitied over some of these ancient drawings. Have you seen any of that as you travel around?
I've seen lots of it. Yeah, lots and lots of it. There are different reasons for the vandalism. It depends, you know. Sometimes it's one tribe getting rid of the ancestral site of another tribe. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's people of today that think that these things are evil, and they scratch them out. Some of it's just plain graffiti. They just want their name next to it. Sometimes they use them as target practice. Sometimes they spray paint over them. Right. One thing that they've done in the past is they chalk the glyphs so they can get better photographs of them. So they take chalk and they outline them with chalk, and the chalk actually binds to the rock. Mm. And so sometimes they chalk it and it's not the right picture. It's like their own idea of what the picture is. Because we really have to be careful of the interpretation, because our worldview is so different than the worldview 9 or 10,000 years ago. And so you can't even take these things literally. So like when I'm doing my work, people will say, well, what does this mean? And a lot of times I don't know. And I don't know what the original work means either, and neither do the archaeologists. I mean, they can follow the linguistic patterns sometimes to figure out sort of what they mean.
Right.
My Hopi friend, you know, her ancestral lineage goes back so far that it's been passed down verbally. But say, for example, up in the Wind River area in Wyoming, a lot of these glyphs were there before the Shoshone even moved there, even migrated there. So they have built a whole mythology around
what
the glyphs
found
that were already there. So there's this, I just learn more and more every time I go.
Were these glyphs originally colored in any way, or were they, and then the colors faded over the years, or?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Some of the ones that were just painted are called pictographs.
Okay.
And the ones that are just pecked or carved are called petroglyphs.
Okay.
But some of them are both. But a lot of the paint has faded. I mean, a lot of the blue is gone, a lot of the red is gone. But I do have photographs of some of them that are still very vibrant pictographs. They used minerals, they used plant materials, they used body fats and things like that, mm-hmm. to pigment the rock wall.
Well, you mentioned photography, I guess, and you use it as a tool as part of the art, but also some of your things are published. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Published.
Yeah, you had some things that were published in the Theosophical Society Journal.
Right,
Quest.
Quest. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Quest.
I have had some of my pictures published in Quest. That was quite a few years ago. And then when I did a big show in Bloomington, Indiana, the local magazine Bloom did a couple pages on my work with photographs. And I've actually been published in Russia, believe it or not. I spoke at a conference there I think it was 2003 maybe. And my work was published in the conference book with the photographs.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Of my work, yeah. So, yeah, and that's true. I forgot about that.
And how many times have you submitted to Art Prize?
Oh, Art Prize. I've only submitted twice, and both pictures got in last year and this year. And both pictures actually sold.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I was very excited. And Art Prize is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's one of the largest competitions in the world. And I managed they only let you do one submission. And so I submitted Broken Promises last year, and I submitted Sky Spirits this year, and both of them sold.
Corporate or private?
Private. Mm-hmm. Private collectors, I guess. And they're skipping next year. So if you're an artist, you won't be able to apply to Art Prize until 2020. Mm-hmm. That will be the next time.
Sky Spirits is the one that you sent us for our show promo, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, yes. So if you go to WVLP.org and scroll down in the promo for this particular show segment, you can see a little bit of Dorothy's work. Do you have a website that they can go see your things or Facebook?
I do. It's actually just dorothygraydon.com.
Okay.
And Sky Spirits is right now the portrait on the front. But I have probably over 100 pictures on the site that are available. Some are available, some aren't.
And you also you've done this playing card deck, and you've got scarves made with your art, and there's one other, and cards. There are cards available.
Oh, yeah, right. The blank greeting cards are available. And my art deck is almost a year old. I had been wanting to do an art deck for a long time. And I was talking with my brother, and I said, you know, I'd really like to do an art deck, but I'm not good at the computer. And he said, we'll figure it out. So he said, come on over to my house. And this is like 2 days before Christmas, right? And I had family coming. I had cooking to do. And I'm sitting at my brother's house in front of the computer putting together this art deck. And it's actually the size of a tarot deck. It's got 78 cards. And it's larger than a playing card deck. And there are three easy games, easy simple games that you can play with it, because there are 53 cards that are divided into four parts. where you can play like a go fish game with it, where you can collect all four parts of the same painting, and the person that collects the most paintings wins the game. So there's that game, and then there's the memory game, of course, where you can turn the cards upside down. And then there's an old maid game, except if you end up with the starry-eyed cat, you win the game, right? And then there's this place in Chicago, which is a gallery, and it's a spiritual center called Life Force Art Center, and it's on West Belmont. And they got a hold of a deck of my cards, and they said, oh my gosh, these cards can be oracle cards. They can be used as oracle cards. And so I went over there and spent probably about 4 or 5 hours with a couple of the people there, and they were going through my deck explaining how this deck could be used as oracle, because a lot of the paintings are taken from ancient sacred sites, you know, inspired from ancient sacred sites. And they recognized that right away as soon as they saw the deck. And they started interpreting as an oracle deck. And I don't know how to do an oracle deck, but they said it is absolutely can be used as an oracle deck. So we're doing a workshop the week after Thanksgiving. I don't know the date exactly, but it's at Life Force Art Center. And they're doing a workshop using my deck of cards and showing how it can be used as an oracle
deck.
That's
so exciting. Things that are developing that you had no idea.
I know. It's possible. It's really exciting.
Where can you still get one of these decks?
Yeah.
Yes, actually, at the Nest. At the Nest.
So come see Esther in Michigan City at the Nest, and you can get one of these decks and own a little bit of the artwork of Dorothy Graydon.
The Nest has the decks, and then let's see, the Society downtown here in Valpo has some of the decks, and Fluid just ran out, if I need to get some more over to Fluid, a wonderful coffee shop in town, by the way. So the decks are available, or you can just call me. You know, I think my phone number is on my website. You can call me and get a deck from me directly if you'd like.
It's exciting.
It is very exciting.
By the way, back to the Toll Theater, how long is that going to be running through?
Well, it's over. It was the entire month of October.
Unfortunately, we missed that because it wasn't on the South Shore Arts site. So.
Oh, I'll have to remember next
just
time.
Just next time you have something, you need to send it directly to one of us or on Facebook or something, because, you know, I think people would be enthralled with your work. You know, it's just so striking. I know, when you had the Chesterton exhibit, it was just like, it's almost sometimes overwhelming to look at things.
I know, people say they have visual overload sometimes.
Yes. but that's a good thing, too. It's just like, it's just, you go from one piece to another, and it's just absolutely mind-boggling. He's like, where were you when you were doing this? So, yeah, it's great. You're listening to Art on the Air with Dorothy Graydon today, WVLP 103.1 FM. And if you're enjoying this and would like to become part of our campaign for the community support, go to WVLP.org support. Our current supporters are Walt Brinninger, who's the landlord of the building, and, of course, Brower Museum from Valparaiso University. And we'd love to get you either support our particular program, the station as a whole, but go to that site and make a commission and an underwriting amount, and whatever amount you can, we'll give you spots on the air. So I also noticed that you had gone to the University of College Cork in Ireland.
Oh, right. Yeah, Cork. Yes, there was. I every once in a while I get invited to these ethnology conferences. That's how I ended up in Moscow. And then University of College Cork, I did a presentation there on petroglyphs and art. And it was very well received. And then recently I was invited to the University of Innsbruck in Austria and did a presentation there on art and petroglyphs, because the ethnologists really understand the ancient carvings and the ancient cultures, and it's very well accepted. My presentations are very well accepted at ethnology conferences. I was invited to another one in Udmurtia this summer, and it would have involved flying to Moscow and then flying in another plane from Moscow to Udmurtia, And I just didn't feel comfortable doing that on my own, so I didn't go to Udmurtia. But the next time around, maybe I'll get to one of the other ones.
Have you done any of these things locally where people could, you know, just besides exhibiting? I mean, that would be a fascinating lecture.
Oh, I have given the lecture a couple times at Valparaiso University for the, I think it was for the retired professors.
Okay.
And the Pines Village has a really nice venue there for if any artists are interested in exhibiting at Pines Village in Valpo. There's a really, really nice, gallery there, and I gave a talk there. Some of the PEO groups, I think they're called, I've given lectures there. I've given my talk at Rotary meetings.
I'm going to have you do a movable art feast one Sunday for us.
Oh, I would love to do that. Yeah, I would love. I love giving the talk because really, truly, my mission is to let people know that these things are out there. And some of the sites are publicly accessible. A lot of the sites that I go to are not publicly accessible because I have to get permission from the rancher or the BLM to get, sure, you know, things like that. But so the talk that I give shows what the reactions that I get from people are like, these things are here in this country? Because, you know, they're not in the history books.
No.
You know, the history books were not written by the Native Americans.
So are you allowed to take photographs at all sites, or have some you can maybe do a sketch but can't take a photograph? Or
So far I have been able to take photographs everywhere I went. The Hopi actually own a ranch that was once owned by John Wayne. And I was allowed to take pictures there. But I had to turn the part off on my camera that gives a location. Mm. And my Hopi friend told me, she said, do not put these pictures online anywhere. So I can't share a lot of the pictures that I've taken in private places. But most of them I can show, but I don't post my photographs online. Mm-hmm. They're just so special to me.
Right. They're private reference.
They're sacred. They're just,
I know that's, it was the sacred, you know, aspect that I was sort of getting at with that question is I didn't know whether some of them were so sacred that they couldn't even be photographed necessarily. So,
well, that's very true. In fact, my friend said that there are some sites that she can't even go to on the Hopi Reservation because they're not part of her clan. Mm. And so she's not even allowed to go there. So, yeah, they take it, the Native Americans take these sites very seriously.
Well, they are serious.
Yes, they are serious, and they're ancient, and many are sacred. Many are shamanic sites. But there are informational sites. There are sites that explain the universe. There are sites for agriculture. There are hunting sites on how to catch or how to get an animal into a box canyon. So directions, some of them look like maps. Some are about fertility. Some of them look like clouds, so mm-hmm. they look like they're looking for rain. But you can't take these things literally. I mean, an arrow in an animal might be asking for rain. It might not be asking for a good hunt.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, our own worldview is so different than theirs that we can't. Some of them are battle scenes. I saw in Wyoming. I saw a battle scene that was just north of the battlefield. I can't think of the name of the battlefield in Wyoming. A Crazy Horse fought there.
You don't know the name of the battlefield.
I'll think of it. But anyway, but I went to a ranch where the Indians actually carved their prayers into the rock before they went into the battle. So that was pretty sacred, and it's right up against the Crow Reservation on a private ranch.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure weather has destroyed a lot of those. I mean, I'm sure a lot of those had like your drawings, multiple layers of information that just wears away with time.
Well, Esther, you are so insightful about this and intuitive, because the thing is when you're standing in front of a rock wall, you see images right away. And if you keep staring, you see the images that were done like before that. So you can look at a rock wall and look at the history of the images all the way back maybe to like 10,000-year-old images with a certain style. And then if you look a little bit more, you can see images that are layered in front of it that were maybe 3,000 years old. And then another layer, 2,000, another layer, 1,000, another layer, a couple hundred years ago. And each layer has a different style of carvings and paintings.
Right. I mean, we're seeing it now in paintings as well, with the equipment, the x-raying capabilities and the ultrasound being so sophisticated. We are seeing beyond the painting, and it's just in the ghost paintings, and so it's very fascinating.
It is really fascinating. And you know, some believe that the reason these are all in one place sometimes is because it adds more power to that spot, to the site. Because the site is considered to be as important or as sacred as the paintings.
It is an actual prayer almost, and so that's what you know, that it does become more powerful as prayers get added to other prayers.
Yes, that's right. And the sites are usually in very specific places, either facing south or east or facing water, most of them. They're very specific about where they actually put their carvings and their paintings. And there's this one site called the McConkie Ranch in Utah, where the figures are life-sized, and they look like warriors, and they look like they're saying, "This is our territory." They're like billboards.
Yeah.
"This is our territory. You do not come in here. This belongs to us. You know, this is our territory." And then there's another site in Utah that is called the Great Gallery, which is like the Sistine Chapel of rock art, right? And you have to hike down into a canyon to see it, and it's a very, very difficult hike. I don't know if I'll ever do it again, especially when it's 100 degrees outside, but you get down into the site, and there looks like there's an altar, and these carvings are very, very spiritual looking. They don't have arms and legs. They just look like they're floating, and you have to look up to see them, just like you would have to look up in a church, you know, to see something. And it was really funny because my sister, I mean, what happened to me was I fell down on my knees. I don't know if it was exhaustion, lack of water or what, but I just fell down on my knees, and my sister looked up and she said, "You know, I'm not a spiritual person, but I think spirits actually did this." And we just were by. It was just unbelievable. It's called the Great Gallery. You can probably find it if you Google it. It's an amazing site, and that's one of my all-time favorite sites, is the Great Gallery. Yeah.
You made a recent trip to Africa.
I did.
Well, tell us a little bit about that.
I have a friend that has made 6 or 7 trips there. She's a pastel artist. Her name is Sue Gambas, and she is one of the she's won all kinds of major national awards with pastels. And she invited me and another friend to go to Kenya with her because she wanted to take some more photographs for her art. She does wildlife art, and so we spent 2 weeks in Kenya on the Masai Mara, and we tent camped. And it was pretty exciting. I mean, we stayed in tents. The Masai warriors guarded us, you know, with their spears. They had their spears and their arrows, and they were just a great group of guys. And the very first night we were there, my friend and I were sharing this tent. And, you know, we're talking about don't go outside at night because of the lions, and, you know, use your flashlight all the time when we're taking you back to your tent, kind of thing. And we get to the tent, and my roomie, I don't want to say her name because she's a middle school teacher here in Valpo, But she started screaming. She's screaming and screaming, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, there must be a hippopotamus in our tent or something. and we're like, and I'm like, what's wrong? And she said, a spider. There's a spider.
How big is the spider, though?
I didn't see it. She just kept saying, it's over there. And so these Maasai guys come running in, and they're like, they've got their spear and their arrows, and they're like, where, what? And she's going, a spider. and they started laughing.
I would imagine.
They just laughed. And so they got rid of the spider. They found it, and they killed it. And then the one guy walked over to the night. There's a little nightstand in there, and he picked up a can of insect spray and said, here, use this next time. So we had some funny stories like that. But you spend the whole day in the Jeep because you don't get out of the Jeep.
No.
And so the scariest thing about going on a safari is getting out of the Jeep to go pee, actually, because there's anybody out there will eat you if you get out of the Jeep, right? Except for the grazers. The one thing that really fascinated me was that they've got the giraffes and the zebras and the wildebeests and all the grazers. They all graze together. You know, I didn't think I'd see them all grazing together. And I asked why, and they said because they all have these different gifts. The giraffe can see far. You know, another animal has better hearing. Another one has better smelling, you know, better sense of smell. And so they watch out for each other. So if a lion or a cheetah should come around, they all warn each other.
What a beautiful community.
Mm-hmm. It's just really, yeah. And they eat different things. So they're not in competition with the grasses that are out there.
Enough for everybody,
yes. Mm. And helping each other out.
What a great image that is. So 2 weeks in Africa. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Did you take any photographs while you were there?
About 3,000 photographs.
You go. It was like when I took my wife out west for the very first time. She'd never seen any red rocks. And she's shooting things even out the window. And she filled up her SD card. And I use a different card in my camera. And she said, what am I going to do? And luckily, my backup camera used that, and I gave it to her. But, I mean, she was like a kid in a candy store for the first time just seeing red rocks.
So. Oh, yeah. I totally understand that. Yeah.
So is there going to be an African series of
work?
I, you know, when I came back, I did probably 5 or 6 pictures. And you can see them online. They're all kind of in one place.
On your website?
On my website, yeah. One of them was called Egnashe, which is an African queen kind of a picture. With the jewelry, because we went to the market and the women wearing the beautiful jewelry that they make with the beads. They were famous for the beading, and then we were coming back at dusk, and there was a Cape buffalo that was struggling. It looked old and it looked crippled and it looked in really like it was in bad shape. And James, our guide, said that animal will be gone in the morning. He said it's too weak to last through the night. And so we're like, oh, so he said, you want to go back and see where it was? And I said, yeah. We all said yes. And we went back, and there was nothing left but bones. Nothing. There was nothing on it. Because the lions come in first, and then the jackals come in next, and then the lions, then the jackals, then the, let me get this straight here. The lions, the ones that laugh, the hyenas.
Hyenas.
Okay. The lions, the hyenas, then the jackals, and then the birds, and anybody else that comes by to pick over the rest of the meat. So you see bones and poop everywhere. Everywhere. That's all you see are bones and poop. And that's awful to say, but, you know, that's
life.
That's life and death out there, you know. So, yeah, it was very exciting, very exciting. And the hippos were right next to us in the water. And one got into the camp one night, and somebody started screaming because they're huge, you know.
And they're probably one of the most dangerous animals. People don't realize that, but hippos are pretty bad-tempered.
Oh,
and
yes.
And I think they're the cause of the majority of people deaths in Africa. Mm-hmm. Cape buffaloes are like number two, actually, because they are very bad-tempered, too.
Yes,
so
they're
crabby. It's not the predators like you like to think. They're generally not.
Yeah, that's true. And I always thought the hippos ate in the water because they spend the whole day in the water. They don't eat the fish in the water. They don't eat, or the crocodiles or anything. They leave the water at night and walk out into the savanna and graze. Did you know that?
Yeah, I think I did. I think I saw.
I didn't know that. That was very interesting.
I knew they didn't eat fish, but that's, you would think that they were getting something from spending all that time in the water. But
yeah, they just stay cool and protect their skin because if they get sunburned, they turn pink. Yeah. They really do get sunburned, so they protect themselves. But yeah, we saw hippo trails going through the savanna because they graze at night. So, but they were right next to us. Oh, and then one night we stayed in a treehouse.
Oh.
So we had to walk across this rickety kind of a bridge, a suspension bridge, to get to the treehouse. And a wild cat got in the treehouse while we were in it at 3 o'clock in the morning. And we were all shining our flashlights on it. And my friend said, "Dorothy, go chase it away."
You go do it.
I was like, "No, you go chase it away."
Give it to Mikey, you know, the old commercial. Let Mikey eat it. You're listening to Dorothy Graydon here on WVLP 103.1 M, Art on the Air. And we have a great conversation. And again, if you're interested in being a guest, contact us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. And, you know, we'd love to have your information and things like that. Send it there. We're on Friday, and then our show is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. So tell us about anything coming up in the future for exhibits. Do you have anything going on pretty soon?
The next exhibit that is scheduled for me is at the Phoenix Rising Gallery in Michigan City. I'm having a solo show there.
Okay. And when is that?
And that's in May. That's not till May.
Well, that's good. Well, remember to send that so we can publicize that for you.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Yeah.
And I'll do an on-air if you wanted to do the Movable Art Feast, the pop-up again this year. It'll be December 2nd if you would like to join in, if you have that time free. So just think about it.
Oh, yeah, December 2nd. I think I can probably do that. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was wonderful last year. I'd love to have you back.
Oh, I would love to come back. That was fun.
It was fun.
And one more time, what's your website and Facebook page? So if anyone wants to look up you?
My Facebook page, you can just go to Dorothy Graydon Artist. And my website is dorothygraydon.com.
Okay.
Very simple.
So if you want to find out about Dorothy, anything more, Dorothy Graydon's been our guest today. It's been wonderful, fascinating, everything like that. And one last time, we'd like to remind you, if you'd like to be an underwriter for this show, the station in general, you can go to wvlp.org/support, become an underwriter at the different levels, the basic. We have intermediate levels, major awards we will announce. We'd like to thank again our supporters, Brouwer Museum, and our landlord, Walter Brechtinger. And we'd like to thank Dorothy for being such a great guest today. You were just wonderful.
Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Having me.
Oh,
thank
you
and
so
we'll
much,
have you,
Dorothy.
We'll
thank
have
you.
You back. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast at Monday at 5 p.m. with hosts Larry Brechner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, our station manager and engineer. And if you're interested in being a guest, again, artontheair@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to have as our guests...
You don't like to say this. Kai Konstantinov. And Brabant Lenting.
Yes, or John Lenting is his real name. So looking forward to having you see you next week right here on 103.1 FM, Art on the Air.